From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Today is Stephanie Rawlings Blake's last as mayor of Baltimore City. We take a look back at her seven-year tenure with two reporters who have covered her for years, from one of the worst snowstorms in city history to the unrest of April 2015 and the violent crime that surged afterwards. We discuss how Rawlings Blake fared, her accomplishments, her failures, and her personal style, which some critics came to see as a liability. A report card on the mayor with Baltimore Brew reporter Mark Reuter and former Baltimore Sun reporter Julie Sharper. It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Tomorrow morning, State Senator Catherine Pugh will be inaugurated as Baltimore Mayor Catherine Pugh. That makes today Stephanie Rawlings Blake's last as mayor of Baltimore City. On this show, we're going to look back at her seven-year tenure in office. She became mayor in 2010 after Mayor Sheila Dixon resigned in disgrace. Rawlings Blake was elected to her first full term in 2011. And here to discuss the mayor's legacy are two reporters who have covered her for years, Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew and former Baltimore Sun reporter Julie Sharper. Welcome to On the Record, both of you.
Good to be here.
Mark Reuter, what would you say are Stephanie Rawlings Blake's major accomplishments in office?
I would say that her major accomplishments is that she did clear up various aspects of the city budget with pensions and with health care benefits. And I think she did a good job in getting those costs under control and in dealing in her earliest years with some serious budget deficits. I'd say her other accomplishment is the growth of the waterfront, which has, I think, been the big economic success of Baltimore. Those projects, with a lot of subsidies, have continued to make South Baltimore, Canton, Fells Point into kind of the premier areas of Baltimore. And she spent a lot of time and political effort to get projects like Harbor Point underway, and they'll be coming together in the next few years.
And we'll talk more about economic development in general. Julie Sharper, what would you say Stephanie Rawlings Blake's biggest accomplishments are?
Well, first of all, I have to absolutely agree with Mark that getting the city finances in order was extremely important. She came in facing some big deficits and really attacked those. In some ways, I think that one of her biggest accomplishments was sort of not standing in the way of all the creative energy in Baltimore, so that you see areas like Hamden and Woodbury and the Station North area, Greenmount West, where there's been a lot of organic development of arts communities or mills turned into restaurants. And I think that the Rawlings Blake certainly helped those, but also sort of was able to just kind of let the city's own creative energy flourish in those areas.
Okay, so those are what you both put on the positive side of the agenda. Perhaps there'll be others. Mark Reuter, when Stephanie Rawlings Blake decided not to seek election this year, she cited the riots of last year, of 2015. But you wrote in an article last year that she was in political trouble long before Freddie Gray died. In your view, where do you think she went wrong?
Broadly speaking, I think she never was able to connect with the average voter. That's one thing that struck me from the beginning of covering her, is the almost animosity among a wide group of people in the city. And it had to do, in many measures, with her personality that was seen as superior and a bit condescending. And then in City Hall, she ran very notably into problems with other members, city council president, kind of a weird battle with the city controller over this and that. And all of this, I think, undercut her political capital. And I think she was going to face a somewhat difficult reelection even before the Freddie Gray. I understood that her own fundraisers at the time had Peter Hart do some surveys, and her negatives were pretty high. So she was facing some oppositions, even before Freddie Gray. And the Freddie Gray incident really, though, was the decisive turn. By almost immediate general consensus of the person on the street, as well as leaders in the city, business leaders, was that she was in obviously a very difficult position, but did not handle it well and let it get out of hand. And then in the aftermath, really did not do anything effective in either addressing the questions or of coming clean on where she might have done better. She held a press conference, her last one, and she was asked about this very question. Did she do anything wrong? Could she have done anything better? Her reply is, life is unfair, and I don't care what public opinion says about me. That maybe sums it up.
That is Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here with us is former Baltimore Sun reporter Julie Sharper. We're talking about Stephanie Rawlings Blake's legacy as mayor of Baltimore. I want to loop back to what you called her personality, the aloofness. And Julie, if you want to jump in, are we talking about personality or style? Not that there's a hard and fast line between them.
There is a certain personality type that you often associate with politicians. Sometimes it's glad-handing. They're slapping you on the back. They're calling out to someone in the crowd that they recognize. And I think Rawlings Blake, perhaps she's more introverted, but she's never really been someone who could be folksy, who could walk into a crowd and just find herself embracing a lot of people. And I think in Baltimore, because we are sort of a warm town where there's that Smaltimore sense, I think that that did not necessarily play well.
Is this something you think people would have had a different attitude about if she had been a man?
That's a great question, and that's something that I've certainly discussed quite a bit. You know, if you look at other male leaders in our city, I think Martin O'Malley playing the guitar was sort of the epitome of someone who was at least in a crowd, you know, really warm with the public. I think if you look at City Council President Jack Young, he's a similar way of being very jocular and jokey, folksy. So in my honest opinion, I think that her reservedness really cut across gender lines and was a drawback.
Mark, Rawlings Blake took office as an agent of change in the wake of Mayor Sheila Dixon's resignation under an ethics cloud. Did her administration operate above board?
I think that it has really been very disappointing about Rawlings Blake in that she did come with, I think, some ideas of reform. I think you see it in the early year or two. And it just sort of dissipated over time as she became sort of an imperious mayor. One really important thing as far as reporters and members of the public who are involved in politics, this has been an extremely untransparent administration, kind of across the board, led by her. It's very hard to get information. And that sort of undercut things. The other kind of odd problem that almost makes, I think, her administration and time a little bit of a tragedy of a very smart woman, very articulate, with some good ideas, is the lack of steadiness as an administrator. Julie and I were talking about just the tremendous turnover of staff in these 7 years, four chief of staffs, who was the right-hand person for the mayor, three city police commissioners, four MOIT, Mayor's Office of Information Technology, directly under her. So we found a lot of turnover, which dissipated the progress that I think she was trying to make in other areas besides finance, maybe vacant to values and others. And so the administration got kind of muddled, and I think her personality became more and more defensive. And I think the public picked up on that. I think a lot of fellow politicians, legislators in Annapolis picked up on this, and it hurt her over the long run.
Speaking of fellow politicians, Julie Sharper, I want to ask you about her relations with the city council. She was the youngest. Rawlings Blake was the youngest person ever to serve on the city council when she was first elected in 1995, and she went on to become president of the council. But as mayor, her relationship with the council was not always friendly.
Right. It's a good point. I mean, she started in the city council when she was just practically out of college. She was very young. She's really spent her entire career in City Hall. So if you think about what might be going through her head and her heart right now, she is now about to leave the workplace where she has spent her entire adult career so far. But her tenure on the city council did not necessarily translate to good relationships with members of the city council. She certainly had members who were quite loyal to her, and some of them, like Bill Cole, who is now the head of the Baltimore Development Corporation. But there is always a lot of tension between Rawlings Blake and Jack Young, the council president. And there were times when there's certainly the sentiment among council members that they had some sort of initiative that was easy to do, it was workable, and they felt like they were just being stymied and stonewalled by the mayor's office.
So you think it was that more than a real different vision of what the city should be doing, what the council should be approving?
Often their goals would align in the end. But very often you'd see a variant of a city council initiative come out of the mayor's office later on. So there is certainly a sense among council members and the council president's staff that Rawlings Blake liked things to be done her way. And if they were done slightly different, she would really stand in the way of that.
Her veto of the youth fund, setting aside a percentage of the city's revenues for programs for the youth, was overridden by the city council. The first veto override in more than 30 years. What do you make of that?
Well, it's shocking because the city council usually does everything. The system is set up to approve just about anything the mayor wants. It's a strong mayoral system. There's a lot of rewards to city council members to toe the line. So that was kind of an open act of rebellion. What I think is the broader question that has really concerned the Black community and many others is the idea that there's two Baltimores, that there is a waterfront, there is a Station North, there is a Hamden that seems to be doing well, does have creative energy. And then there are vast numbers of neighborhoods that are really falling down. Those neighborhoods feel, the people there feel terribly neglected by the mayor. They don't think they're getting city services. They see their water bills go up. And there's really a lot of alienation that broke out and coalesced around Freddie Gray. None of that has gone away. And she, either before the Freddie Gray incident or afterwards, has not been effective in dealing with that, right down to the area of not being able to connect, not seeming to want to connect to those folks, and of sending out aides and others to do that sort of work. That, I think, is, when we look back 30 or 40 years now, is a lot of missed opportunities. You know, West Baltimore is in tangibly worse shape than it was in 2010, and no one seems to have any ideas from City Hall on how to deal with it.
We need to take a quick break here on the record. We'll be back in a minute to continue our discussion of Stephanie Rawlings Blake's time as mayor of Baltimore. I'm Sheila Cast. When we do come back, we're going to focus some more on development. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Today is Stephanie Rawlings Blake's last day as mayor of Baltimore, so we're discussing some of what she accomplished and what didn't get done with two reporters who have covered her for years, former Baltimore Sun reporter Julie Sharper and Mark Reuter of the Baltimore Brew. Early on, Stephanie Rawlings Blake set a goal of attracting 10,000 families to Baltimore. The Vacants to Values program was part of that effort. In a recent interview with the Baltimore Sun, Mayor Rawlings Blake said the Vacants to Value program deserved credit for revitalizing parts of the city. Let's listen to an excerpt.
You know, walk around Greenmount West. That didn't happen by accident. All the investment that you see there is a direct result of the work that I've done through Vacants to Value and the ripple effect that that has had in the community. And it's not just residential, it's commercial. That would not happen but for the groundwork that we set in my administration. Take a look at Station North and all of the work that's going on there. Again, a direct result of the partnership between my administration and the anchors in that area that's really spurred a lot of energy and just makes me proud.
Mark Roeder, there does seem to have been an uptick in development during Stephanie Rawlings Blake's administration. Greenmount West, Station North, and of course Port Covington. Does she get some credit for that?
She does, but a very mixed record, and it gets into this question of the two Baltimores. The waterfront Baltimore, Harbor Point, Fells Point, Canton, and now Port Covington, the city has been very successful by most accounts. Also, the city has spent directly or indirectly huge amounts of capital. Port Covington is not going to bear any financial fruit to the city for many, many, many years and has some real serious long-term risks, you know, but it has been relatively successful. But the mayor is just flat out wrong in saying that Vacants to Value and these other programs have been successful. They have not been successful. They have made next to no impact in areas of East Baltimore, West Baltimore, Park Heights. The only impact they've made is that a lot of vacant buildings have been demolished. And this was demonstrated by a former colleague of mine and writer for the Baltimore Sun, and Joan Jacobson wrote a good, solid piece for the Able Foundation on this and went through the actual numbers. So there really is a disparity here. And then another point that we haven't raised is the problem of crime and homicides in the city. And
I do want to get to that, but Julie Sharper, let me ask you first. Critics of Sheila Dixon claim she was too cozy with developers. That played out in the legal case against her. Was Stephanie Rawlings Blake different in that respect?
Well, she certainly didn't have the ethical lapses that Sheila Dixon had. But was she cozy with developers? Yes, absolutely. You know, we see some of the same names come up time and time again as her major donors, who are also developers in the city. And one of the incidents that always sticks out in my mind was that Rawlings Blake actually officiated the wedding of two prominent lobbyists who were very tied in with the development community. So although she certainly arrived talking a great game about ethics, she was very cozy with that development and lobbyist community.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Baltimore Brew reporter Mark Reuter and former Baltimore Sun reporter Julie Sharper. We're talking about Stephanie Rawlings Blake's track record. Today is her last full day in office as mayor of Baltimore. Mark Reuter, let's get back to the point you were making about public safety and crime.
Boy, that's, you know, it's been such a tough question. In her 7 years, she started off, and for the first 2 to 3 years, the crime rate continued to go down, showing this sort of trajectory that had been established somewhat under O'Malley and most definitely under Dixon. And then it reversed. It had been reversing for a full year before the Freddie Gray situation really resulted in chaos. And I think a story that's very hard to grapple, we've tried to, and that No, the Sun has tried to, is crime, which remains a very serious problem. And it's not just the homicides, which are trending to another year of over 300, but just plain robberies, burglaries, and other things that make people unsafe, including in some of the communities that the city has poured so much capital into.
Julie, Mayor Rawlings Blake have done, in your view, that wasn't done?
Well, I think if you look back under Commissioner Bielefeld, the numbers were always good. The statistics were really trending well when Fred Bielfeld was police commissioner. And I think when he left and a lot of his staff turned over, a lot of liaisons between the mayor's office and his staff left, I think things really changed at that point. And I don't think that Anthony Batts as police commissioner had that same level of success. We started to see the homicides tick up, as Mark said, long before Freddie Gray's death and the unrest. Maybe the problem was trying to bring in a police commissioner from outside. Maybe they would have been better just choosing someone internally at the get-go. I know.
Well, but even the departure of Commissioner Bielfeld, is it a consensus among those who cover City Hall that that impetus came from Mayor Rawlings Blake as opposed to Bielfeld wanting to leave?
Publicly, they always said that he was sort of ready to move on. But privately, there was a sense that there were a lot of personality conflicts there.
And this gets to the problem that we saw over and over again is this turnover in staff. The mayor, I think, had some good ideas of getting national searches done for example, the director of recreation and parks, the director of transportation, the police commissioner with Mr. Batts. But those haven't panned out well, and almost all her outside appointments have, most of them have left. So they were here for like a year, 2 years, 3 years the most, and made no impact. And that's been a real problem. The large bureaucracy of Baltimore City government, a bureaucracy that is much too big and is something we would hope that the new mayor would really look at, I think has been not channeled well at all in the last few years by the mayor, who has ignored it in many ways and let it churn on. And that means that a lot of city services, from road repaving to crime and the investigations of crime to water bills, have all sort of cascaded. And I got the sense that the mayor's office was much more concerned with, in effect, hiding this through lack of transparency and through the lack of reporters and citizens getting records than of coming to grips with it. And certainly she has a tendency that she will never admit anything is wrong. I guess she sees that as something that would be a weakness, but she seems to be unable to admit that anything goes wrong, and therefore there's been a tendency of a number of things to go wrong.
Julie Sharper, the mayor touted her efforts on school construction in a recent interview with the Baltimore Sun, but she came under fire for closing rec center. She was famously opposed to creating a separate fund for youth in the city budget. Looking back, what do you think of her track record on young people?
I certainly see the school construction effort as a promising sign, although certainly there's a need for much more funding and a much larger initiative than what's currently been approved, but at least that's a step in the right direction. Closing rec centers, she had this grand plan that she was going to close some small rec centers that weren't doing as well, that were falling apart, and build these big, beautiful new rec centers. But that really rubbed people the wrong way. And so often,
the closing of the ones
closing those community rec centers, because those were things that people could walk to. Kids could walk across a couple streets and get there. And I think that that was really painful for a lot of communities when their rec centers closed. And although the large rec centers on some level are a fantastic idea, transportation is always an issue in the city, especially when you have kids that might need to get there by themselves or conflicts between different neighborhoods. I think that that certainly lost her a lot of points with everyday residents.
This long-running dispute over whether to sell parking garages, dispute between Mayor Rawlings Blake and City Council President Jack Young, just in the middle of last month, she said she'd found a way to basically do an end run around the city council and sell the parking garages, although she said it would not happen by the time she left office. Mark, what do you make of this?
That she wants to get her way and that she has a real strong vindictiveness to it, and she wanted to prove that she could prevail over the city council president. It's very childish. She's done a number of things in the last year, even though she has spent huge amounts of time outside the city and really not running the shop, of putting in these longer-range plans that probably will be dismantled over the next few months.
Well, we need to wrap up, and that may be the right point to ask you. Is there a way you could summarize what Stephanie Rawlings Blake's legacy will be? What will people think of when they look back on her term as mayor?
I think they'll look back at it as sort of a lot of lost opportunities. I think it hasn't been a disaster, but it really did not have the promise that this city needed to get out of its tailspin of these serious problems across the board, housing, public safety. And we frittered away a lot of opportunities, I think. I think the citizenry, not only in regarding police, which we know is more cynical of city government than it was 7 years ago, unfortunately. That is why the rec centers were so critical. Those were one of the few things that these impoverished communities could cling to, and they could see their kids going there and at least being safe from this serious problem of street crime. And that was taken away with them. The mayor failed to communicate her principles, philosophy, pretty consistently. I think it has to do with the secrecy and lack of transparency. So in many ways, what I'm saying is that she had a lot of good ideas. Some came to fruition, but I think turned out to be in many ways her own worst enemy.
Julie, any thoughts about what we'll remember about Stephanie Rawlings Blake's tenure as mayor?
I think she was good at diagnosing the city's problems, of sort of naming them, setting up boards to examine them. But I think we see a lot of wheel spinning. I don't think we see a lot of real change. I think that there's certainly some promise there in the school construction. But I think for a lot of people, they'll look back at Rawlings Blake's administration. They might talk about the Grand Prix debacle. But the one thing I think that'll really come up is that huge uptick in crime, and particularly the city's homicide rate. And I'm afraid that sort of will stain her legacy permanently.
Well, I really appreciate this perspective from both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Julie Sharper is a former reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Mark Reuter reports for the Baltimore Brew. I'm Sheila Cass. Tomorrow on midday at noon, Tom Hall and his guests will take another look at Stephanie Rawlings Blake's tenure as Baltimore mayor, and they'll also look ahead to Mayor-elect Catherine Pugh's administration. Tune into that tomorrow and join us on The Record again in the morning.